Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League. Oh, what a goal! It's Dele Rosalie's Premier League debut!
Got it lost under his feet, and it's come for Lamella!
Welcome back to another edition of Wheeler Dealer Radio, the internet's most dangerous Tottenham Hotspur podcast. I'm your host, Skipjack, and we are here to talk about not one, but two Tottenham Hotspur games. And most exciting, we have the man responsible for Spurs crashing out of the Europa League with us tonight. Let's start with him, our veteran and the albatross haunting Tottenham Hotspur, Brian. Brian, how did it feel to cost Tottenham a trophy this week?
I mean, look, they drew the game that I was at, so
it's they needed to win it by a lot.
Yeah, but that's—I mean, that's not my fault though. Like,
is it Vince's fault?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't in Belgium, so.
So you're claiming that you never had anything to do with it. You weren't at
it. Yeah, I'm just saying. I mean,
U.S. intelligence sources are saying that Brian was in fact in Belgium and he was videotaped by 20 different people.
God damn it. I didn't think that would come out. That just didn't seem likely.
They were sitting right next to you, Brian. Next,
Belgium is the most videotaped country in the world. Of course they were going to know.
Next up, he is an evil numbers wizard and a U.S. intelligence asset. We have Michael Cayley. Michael, welcome back.
That's good to talk. It's good to talk.
Good to talk, because you haven't podcasted enough tonight. What is your favorite U.S. intelligence asset that has contributed to Tottenham's season this year?
I think it is. I mean, clearly, given that Russian intelligence assets are currently winning the Premier League, it's a good analogy.
Yes, I think so too. I was proud of it.
Yeah.
Finally, he's a cutout for Russian intelligence. And he is last and least. We have Ben Daniels. Ben, how are you doing tonight?
Good, as you say.
You've been on with Michael too long, I see.
I think that was an attempt at a Russian impersonation. I'm not sure.
Could be
it was
both.
Either that or a really bad Cayley impression. I can't tell.
Yeah, it was an attempt at a Russian impersonation of speaking English in lieu of the lead-in from Greg, but I'm glad that just died and this is
good work,
still
Ben.
Happening.
Good work.
Yeah, no, this has all been very good so far.
I know.
You're in for a treat, listeners.
We are super topical tonight.
we really are. You might say we're about to have a really good session here with I'm so sorry. Brian, so you
this is
were,
why no one likes you.
Yeah, well, no, everyone no one likes me because of my super high level wrestling references that they're just jealous they didn't come up with. Brian, you were in London as reported on in several major US newspapers, but tell us how was it? How was your experience going to I guess not White Hart Lane for a game because you had to fly out on Sunday, but how was it going to Wembley and seeing the sights and sounds of England's capital?
It was really cool. The match at Wembley was it was one of the loudest crowds I've ever been in. I mean, there's about 80,000 people there, 7,000 or 8,000 probably Ghent fans, and I mean, the Spurs fans just sang the whole time. It was loud. Like when Wanyama scored the second goal, I mean, the roof blew off the place. Like it was really it was interesting because it seemed kind of like because Spurs offered discount tickets for this match. There were a lot of tickets for £5 and £10. And the goal was to sell out the stadium and kind of prove that we could put people in the seats and that we could make it loud. And that just because it was just this giant space didn't mean it didn't have to feel like a home game. And that's pretty much exactly what happened. Like this, it really felt like you know, a sort of home atmosphere, and very much not like what we saw kind of earlier in the Champions League group stages, or, you know, when Arsenal played there in the Champions League in years past. It was a really cool atmosphere, and, you know, the match was whatever. But the atmosphere was great.
How was it watching the match there? Because it was a very strange match to watch on TV, because there were times where, I mean, maybe you guys disagree, but Spurs looked as good as they've looked all year, and then something stupid, fluky, or dumb on Spurs' part would happen, and it sort of sapped us of our momentum or shot us in the foot. I really thought up until that final sort of breakaway where they scored, I really thought we were going to pull it out. How was it watching it in person?
Yeah, I mean, it felt the exact same way. Like, it felt like we were on the front foot and dominant the entire time. I think there was maybe like a 5 or 6 minute stretch after we scored the second goal that I thought Ghent finally got back on the ball and made use of having an extra man. But for the most part, it felt like we had all the momentum, all the control. And aside from, you know, an own goal and then, you know, just a quick counterattack, there wasn't a lot that Ghent did. But in terms of the other thing that was interesting in terms of watching it was I couldn't quite tell what the quality of the officiating was.
Does that have to do with the officiating in your view, or does that have to do with who you were watching it with?
No, I mean, it was both, but just watching it, like, there were certainly quite a few calls that were questionable. And, you know, watching any sporting event live, you know, in the stadium, you're always never sure about, you know, replays and how good the officiating actually is. But there were a lot of calls that I thought were very much not even borderline, but like just blatantly wrong. One of them was not the Dele Alli red card, but some other.
For those of us watching at home, the Dele Alli red card was the only correct call made all day.
Well, I think I feel like it's been longer than a week, but correct me if I'm wrong, but the corner that they scored the own goal off of shouldn't have been
given. That was a bad call.
Yeah.
It should have been a goal kick.
Yeah. So we were talking a little bit before the pod. Brian, you said from your vantage point, you thought the Dele red card was definitely a red card.
Oh yeah, I mean, I from where I was, it happened kind of down towards the end that we were sitting in, and you saw him get fouled, and you saw him get up, and you're just like, oh man, I hope that this ball either gets cleared or gets away from him fast, and it did not, and you just saw him lunge in, and I went over with Vince, who also writes for the site and has on the podcast occasionally. And he was adamant, just absolutely adamant that it was a horrible call. And I was like, no way, man. And then we picked up a copy of, I think it was the Metro the next morning. And I showed him the picture on the back page. And he's like, oh yeah, that's probably a red card.
So how would you say, you know, just, I don't want to get too technical for our listeners. So, you know, use whatever language you think is appropriate. How would you say Vince cost us this match?
Well, I think, you know, I think it was basically his insistence that Ghent were garbage and didn't belong even in the same stadium as us.
This is before the match even started, I'm guessing.
No, this was following the own goal, I think, that it started. Like, he gave them the benefit of the doubt for a little while, and then they got their fluky goal, and then he started to get a little agitated. But then once the red card happened, it was just downhill from there. But you know, I don't think he was the sole cause. I think Dele Alli contributed.
You too. We don't want to leave you out. You obviously
right. You know, whatever. Like, I'm a bit part player, but whatever. So yeah, it was. But it was quite an experience. I mean, it was, if that's what our Wembley, you know, atmosphere is going to be like next year, then it'll actually be kind of cool.
So you think, I mean, given that you were able to go in such a big stadium, do you think it's going to be important do you think it would help the atmosphere at the new White Hart Lane or whatever they're calling it, if they can make some of those cheaper tickets available? Do you think that affected the atmosphere at all, or did that just fill the place up?
I mean, I think it – I don't know how much it affected the atmosphere in terms of, like, who was able to go and that, because, like, I didn't get to see a match at White Hart Lane and didn't really compare it. But it definitely felt like there were, you know, the atmosphere felt a little more working class as you were walking around. Some of the fans, like at White Hart Lane on game day, like we were over there on game day, there were definitely a lot more people there in, you know, like suits and, or, you know, like trousers and button downs and stuff. That was not evident in the area that we were in at Wembley. But I think the key for, like, for having these big stadiums is just putting bodies in the seats. And I think, you know, Spurs kind of hit on, you know, what a good formula is to put 80,000 people in Wembley, and that's to offer these cheaper tickets. And if I were Spurs, that's what I'd be doing all next year.
Well, hopefully they open the place up for all the games next year. I don't know if we've read if they're going to limit it to like 50 for league games or what have you. But it would be interesting. You also had a chance, before we move off your trip, you also had a chance to get pitch side at White Hart Lane on Sunday, right?
Yep, yep. We got to go down, and I got within, like, touching distance of Jermaine Genus, which was really cool.
What's it smell like?
Like bergamot.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That seems about right.
Yeah.
Well, that's very cool. Any other bits or bobs from the trip you'd like to share with us? Any of Vince's dirty habits that the listeners should be aware of?
No. Vince is a very clean and well-mannered individual. He was a pleasure to be around.
He's all right.
And then we can talk about it, what really happened offline. So.
Good to know. You'll find that on our if you contribute to our Patreon, you can find that on our secret podcast that we do later on tonight. Let's talk about Ghent a little bit more before we move off of it. Michael, was this in some ways Spurs' best performance of the season? Because it felt like that occasionally.
Against Ghent?
Yeah. It felt like there were times where they just – I don't think they've looked better, but – it is Ghent, so.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, again, acknowledging that this is either Genk or Ghent.
It's Ghent.
Spurs. It's Ghent?
Ghent, with a T.
Spurs controlled Genk all game. Genk were unable to progress the ball. And
Genk's defense. I thought that was really a failing by Pochettino.
Yeah, there were a good number of scoring chances, and of course, because of that, Genk scored from whatever crap that they created. What was striking though is that we went back to the back three, and after seeing this team, the thing that made me feel good about things was not merely that we went to the back three. But that even when we, for a period, significant period of time, chasing the game, what Pochettino did, we were down 10-11, he still stuck with the same shape with the back three, obviously with the center backs pushing forward a lot, and then brought on Heung-min Son for a short time to actually play wing back. He ended up switching to a back four and switching things around, but like we stuck with that shape for a while. Then even after we didn't win the game, still stuck with the back three going into the next match. So it seems to me that Pochettino is seeing that if we're going to be playing Wanyama in midfield every day, and we're going to be that we need to be playing this back three shape. And it was a really good performance.
Now, did the XG numbers actually like bear out how dominant it was in this particular game? Because I remember looking at the map and being like, not impressed.
So the thing that happened in this match in particular is that Ghent, every single tackle in the box was perfectly timed. Every single pass that we made into a dangerous area, someone managed to get a touch. They defended so perfectly inside the 18-yard box. It's almost like it's impossible to recreate that. There could have been there were a ton of
moves that could have led to big chances that didn't. At the same time, they did not defend all that well outside the 18-yard box, but none of the things that they did got called fouls. So I would totally outsource my my analysis of the refereeing to Vince at this point. I thought it was pretty badly done.
So yeah, that meshes kind of with what I saw. Was I saw that we were getting into good positions and we were creating opportunities in the box, but never actually getting on the end of them.
Yep.
All right.
On this podcast, as we talk amongst ourselves as Spurs fans, and I don't know, in Spurs fandom in general, we like to talk about how sort of delightfully dirty this team is, how they get shitty tackles in, and you know, like to get physical, and frankly, like casually hurt other players on other teams. And we sort of revel in it sometimes, but I think we saw the flip side of it in this game when Dele Alli had a really very horrendous tackle. Is this something you're worried about either as a team or with Dele in particular? I know you're more of a Dele skeptic than the rest of us are.
So I think, you know, the kind of dirtiness we talk about with Spurs is a little more dark artsy and less like flagrant ankle breakers. And that's really what this was.
Yeah, but those things kind of they travel together. So, I mean, I understand what you're saying. I don't think you can entirely divorce one from the other, though.
I mean, like, yes. I mean, we had, you know, the Battle of the Bridge with Eric Dyer literally trying to murder people. You know, we had the Dembele eye gouge, the Dele Alli punch at Crystal Palace.
I mean, Wanyama,
West Brom.
Wanyama's, you know, like, jacking people up pretty regularly. I mean, it's usually within the bounds of English football, but I don't know.
Like, you know, there's a line between playing dirty and cynical and like putting in actual dangerous challenges that could injure people seriously. And this crossed that line. You know, that isn't the kind of normal dirtiness that you see from Spurs, I don't think, at least. You know, I think Dele Alli in particular is a little hot-headed and, you know, rash, and that could lead to stuff like this, you know, born out of frustration or what have you. But, you know, I don't think, generally speaking, besides Eric Lamella, no one is going to put like a reducer on somebody that's just like, you know, criminally offensive most of the time. So, no, I don't think it's an endemic problem with this team at all. I think our dirtiness is of a different sort.
You're not worried about it with Dele, because I feel like he's had a few like ill-timed red or instances, things that have gotten him suspended during his time here.
I mean, I think Dele's hot-headedness is certainly, you know, something that needs to be restrained, but, you know, this type of challenge isn't necessarily, I think, emblematic of his game. And certainly not to a degree that it's a cause for concern.
Okay.
But yeah, it was very bad and incredibly poor timing, because we sure could have won that game.
So we didn't win this game, and I mean, it wasn't good because now we're out of the Europa League.
As it turns out.
But I mean, this was a cupcake team. I think we all expected to walk this fixture. I think, you know, if we got in Genk, which now Ghent and Genk play each other, which will make Twitter real fun during that round of the Europa League, you know, we would have had another fairly, which should have been an easy match. And given the overall strength of the Europa League, I think we all like Spurs' chances at maybe getting a trophy. But now, you know, our fixture congestion is less. We can focus on the FA Cup and the league. Ben, do you think this is a net positive, a net negative? I mean, how are you looking at crashing out of the Europa League this early? At a bare minimum, it's going to cure some fixture congestion issues.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously it depends on what is the point of being a soccer team and what are you trying to accomplish? You know, for me, going out of any cup competition is a net negative because it's one less trophy you can win. And winning trophies is fun as shit. You know, we've only got to do that once since I've been a fan, but it was awesome and I would love to do it again. So I'm disappointed that we crashed out of the Europa League. You know, I don't blame Pochettino for how he managed the squad. Like, I mean, he put a team out in the first leg that should have done better than it did, and it didn't. You know, we kind of got bit by, like we talked about already, a fluke goal and a stupid red card that really made it an uphill battle in this leg. You know, like, I don't think the team was a problem. You know, we should have won. We should have been able to win and carry on in the competition. So, you know, given all of those circumstances, for me, failing to advance is a failure and it's bad. Now, there are knock-on positives in terms of, you know, fixture congestion that will make those other competitions easier to do better in than we might have otherwise. But, you know, I never want to go out of a cup. And, you know, this is, again, a winnable tournament. We're probably the best team in it. It sucks.
Well, United, they're still in it, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, we're look at the table, man. We're better than United.
Good point. I mean, Michael, when you look at our season going forward, I mean, now that we're out of the Europa League, taking that into account, looking at what that does to our fixture list and all that, how do you feel about Spurs' chances to either win the FA Cup or finish top four right now? Does the Europa League have any sort of measurable impact, in your opinion, on either of those goals?
I mean, the data on sort of rest is not terrible. It's difficult to work with, but I think it's reasonably solid that if having fewer games helps you play better in the few games that you've got. And so I think that in a extremely tight top four race, this is good news for that top four race. I agree with Ben that, like, you know, winning cups is pretty great, and winning cups that guarantee you access to Champions League next year is pretty great, and winning European cups is pretty great. But this definitely improves Spurs' top four chances by some non-zero amount. I don't know about the FA Cup. I feel like it's so few matches, and the semifinals of the FA Cup look like there's a good chance they're going to be completely bonkers. I'd really like to be in that. I think right now the way the FA Cup is shaping up, it's going to be sort of like a really great NCAA style Final Four, and that would be a lot of fun to have Spurs be in that.
Yeah, it's weird about those kind of matches, because they're on paper the sort of matches you want your team to be in. Like, it's going to be probably either Chelsea, United, City, us, and Arsenal, and that seems like what it's probably going to turn into. And that, like, there isn't an easy game for anybody in that group. And, you know, I don't know. Like, that's exciting on paper until we actually have to watch Spurs play City in the semifinals of the FA Cup. And it's just, I don't know. I tear is the overwhelming emotion I feel. But, you know,
this, I hope it's City.
Yeah. Why do you prefer City to the other options? I feel like Arsenal is gut-wrenching for non-soccer. They might even be the best matchup we could get.
Yeah, I just mean the Arsenal in a cup match is going to make me...
Oh, so that's the
unpleasant feelings.
Yes.
All of the teams are good. None of them are teams I want to play.
Yeah, I was...
Well, unless Lincoln City get past Arsenal, so...
Yeah.
Yeah. I was talking to Ben about this earlier.
The magic of the cup, you never know.
Like, I feel like when Arsenal, won their two FA Cups, they were just playing, garbage team. I don't know if this is true or not. I'm just telling you how it felt. But they just played, garbage team after garbage team, and they beat, Stoke in the final one year, and it's like... How does this not happen for us? How come we can't get, I mean, I know we haven't played, a real dip, a Premier League team in the FA Cup yet, so it's not like we haven't had sort of an easy road so far, but, why can't we have, Sutton and, Lincoln in the finals?
We got to the League Cup final a couple of years ago and had to play Chelsea. United got to the League Cup final this year and got to play Southampton. Where is that cup final for us?
Yeah, why can't – well, I guess that's when we played – Portsmouth in the
in
the FA Cup semis or Coventry in the FA Cup final.
And we still had to play Chelsea in the next round, right?
Yeah.
If we do get to the semis, the best team that we'll have had to play to get to the semis is going to be either Millwall or Villa. So let's you know.
Yeah, but it's not about that. Michael,
I mean, arguably Gillingham put up more of a fight.
I mean, look, you know, we dream of that moment of getting to play against a shitty team in the final, but imagine, you know, you're Arsenal and then you lose in a cup final to Birmingham City, or you're Man City and you lose to Wigan. That's not fun either.
Remember that photo of like some no-name schlub on Birmingham, like running pat, like patting Koscielny on the head as he's like sitting on the ground right after the. Oh, that was great. I mean, the flip side of this is like mortifying and terrifying as this all is, like in the abstract and in the moment. Like, if we beat these teams, like it's going to be even better. Like, it's going to be incredible. Like, imagine if, like, as terrifying as it is, imagine if we beat Arsenal in an FA Cup final. I know we talked about that last week, but think of how incredible that would be.
Like, no, I mean, the League Cup that we did win recently, you know, we beat Arsenal in the semis and Chelsea in the final. Like, that makes it that much sweeter, and that's awesome.
Yeah.
It's just, God, I don't trust it. I don't like it. I don't want it. I don't need it.
Well, it's even worse is none of the teams that will potentially, I guess City, but other than City, no one else is going to be dealing with, like, tricky European fixtures that they're going to be juggling, or, you know, I guess there's a chance they could run into, like, you know, a league schedule that makes their life a little difficult, and maybe they can't rotate before they play us or something. But, you know, it's like, I want to play Stoke and Southampton on the way to a final. Even though, like Kaylee said, we've played nobody so far. So anyway, in that, let's get back to the top four race, because we played, speaking of Stoke, we played them this past weekend. And it was, I believe the technical term is, a paddling. Ben, was this encouraging for you, given how I feel like we've seen some semi-lackluster performances from Spurs? I was particularly impressed that we persisted with the back three, even when Wimmer was in the game for a while.
I'm honestly discouraged. You know,
oh, no.
You know, oh, this Ben. Is the third. So this is the third game in a row we've beaten Stoke 4-0, and I'm pretty sure Harry Kane thought that games against Stoke just end when you score four goals. And so he tried really hard to make that happen before halftime to get home to his new baby. And, you know, he found out after that that wasn't the case, that we still had to play a second half. And I'm just very concerned that our top striker doesn't understand how football games work.
So wait,
and that to me is a little worrying.
You're just coming around to the idea that Harry Kane might be a little stupid.
Might be. But, and, you know, normally it's been like kind of like this off the pitch stupid that is endearing. This is like, wow, he doesn't know you have to play two halves of football just because you scored four goals. I don't know. I'm concerned.
I look forward to next week when you let us know that Harry keeps his mouth open a lot. That's going to be a fun conversation to have. I think Spurs definitely took their foot off the gas in the second half. I don't know what you guys think. I mean, also, half the team seemed to get injured in the second half, or just felt that way. But Spurs definitely, I think, let their foot off the gas in the second half. And, you know, if there's ever a time where that's understandable, it's when you're up 4-0 against Stoke.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, that first half was great. Harry Kane had two beautiful goals, one not-so-beautiful goal.
Can we talk about how great, you know, Christian Eriksen gets a lot of stick from Spurs fans, but that assist was just something else. I mean, incredible assist. Like, no, who can make that pass but Christian Eriksen?
Who thinks that Christian Eriksen isn't one of the, like, five best midfielders in England and gives him
Lots of Spurs fans do. It's ridiculous. I don't understand it.
Shut up. Christian Eriksen is bad, and Barcelona, you should never buy him.
You're right. Like, you're right, Ben. Barcelona was looking elsewhere, except for they have that one guy in their scouting department who's a Spurs fan but doesn't actually watch Spurs that often, but he listens to our podcast. So now he's going to
It's all very weird. You know, the transfer market is a very nebulous, murky world. But,
our transfer policy.
What we say here is determinative of, like, the actions of large clubs. So,
you mean
Christian Eriksen is a mediocre player. His final ball is lacking. His set piece delivery is terrible. And his hair is weird.
Also, Harry Kane can't do it on the big stage. So,
I will say, and, like, maybe this is just some naive bullshit, but it does feel like, you know, that kind of media hype helps, you know, with a player getting elevated to that level where a bigger club will come in for him. I'm absolutely fine with Christian Eriksen being, like, the most underappreciated player to ever live. Like, I don't care. If everybody thinks he sucks, that's wonderful. I don't care. Because I love him. He's fantastic.
And just further to that, can we mention that he has 5 goals and 10 assists this season?
He's excellent. No, he's incredible, and it's a mix of
his expected goals. His expected goals per 90 numbers are about equal to what's a good one here? Sergio Aguero, about the same as Sergio Aguero in XG per 90.
Okay, now I'm with Ben. I'm worried you're going to say that too loud and someone's going to hear.
Yeah. Oh, he has more assists than anyone in the Premier League. Over the past three seasons, he has more goal and assists than any other midfielder you would point to. Yeah, Ozil, Hazard, like everybody.
I think Eriksen is – the reason you don't see him tied to other teams is a mix of other teams have sort of – they're invested in an attacking midfielder that might be where Eriksen would fit in. And also, Spurs are big enough now where, if you're a team like Barcelona, there's just an element of like, do you really want to, you know, deal with Spurs, you know, deal with Daniel Levy and pay the Premier League premium, or do you want to maybe look elsewhere for a guy who's more like your of a system guy or whatever? But I don't know. I think Eriksen is just in a nice, weird place that works very well for us.
Barcelona need to replace Andres Iniesta like immediately. And Christian Eriksen is 25 and fantastic. Like, there is nobody better that they could buy than Christian Eriksen right now. And
but there's just no.
I'm are so any happy of you worried that that's about? Not even a consideration.
I was about to say, are any of you worried about losing him? Like, I'm not.
No. I mean, he's the best player on our team. Like, full stop. I will happily go to bat for that.
I agree with that. He does.
And.
Yeah.
People shit on him, and it's stupid, and I don't care.
It's great, because he got really introduced to Spurs, especially at a time when this team, like, was kind of not in a great place with Tim Sherwood and all that. You know, he was scoring goals, and he was really the only guy scoring goals when he came in initially, and or at least he was our most important goal scorer. And, you know, since then, his game has changed a little, or at least what he's done for the team has changed a little bit, and it's better, and we're a better team for it, and he's really the engine that makes us hum, but... It's the same thing we saw with Modric. We saw this with Modric years ago. Like, it was very late in his tenure with Spurs when Spurs fans started appreciating him. And really only after Chelsea came in for him. Or I guess right before Chelsea came in for him.
Yeah. I mean, the thing with Eriksen is that, in the last 2 years, he's really made this leap. Mostly not by improving his attacking game. I think that's the thing that has caused him to get misrecognized, is that his attacking game was great when he got here, and he's shown that he can be effective from a number of different roles, from a number of different spaces. What he's done is developed into one of the best defensive. A sort of attacking among midfielders who play more advanced positions, he's one of the best defensive players in the Premier League. So good that he can do a job in central midfield in a lot of situations, and that is incredibly valuable given that defense is half of the game. But because his attacking output hasn't changed that much, his attacking performances haven't gotten that much better, it wasn't recognized for quite a while just how good he was.
We're going to look back when, like, we get all of his prime years. We're going to – one of the more important seasons in Tottenham's recent history will be the year he stagnated at Ajax, because that just set people's perceptions of him in a way that we're still benefiting from, and it's great, and I love it.
Yeah, I mean, I completely believe that Christian Eriksen is enough under the radar that he could conceivably spend his whole career here, and nothing would please me more.
Yeah, certainly till, you know, we're ready to sell him on our terms, but that's it's fantastic. I love watching Eriksen, and just because he doesn't score off of free kicks that much anymore, he's never gonna leave.
Like, the thing about free kicks is, like, free kicks are incredibly hard and incredibly high variance. Like,
didn't Ronaldo not score off a free kick? Didn't Ronaldo not score off a free kick for like years or something like that?
And he still has scored more free kicks than anyone else in the last 7 years.
That's incredible.
Like, in league play. That might not still be true, but it was true recently.
Oh, Christian Eriksen, he is the best. Michael, anyone else that deserves, like, real credits for this? I think it's worth pointing out that after scoring that goal, Dele Alli had a really basic Instagram post. I'm a little worried this entire team... Like, it's spreading, and this entire team's just going to be, like, talking about how great Love Actually is in, like, November or something. Like, I don't know. It was very. I'm getting worried about Deli. He's going to start wearing hot dog shirts or something.
What was his Instagram post for those of us like me who have not seen it?
Hold on.
Was it about Love Actually? Because I have takes.
No. Okay. It's a little early in the year for Love Actually. It is. Hold on. I want to make sure I get this right because it was pretty awful. Here we go. In quotes, picture of celebrating his goal. Your past mistakes are meant to guide you, not define you. And then he has like the hands raising the roof.
I mean, I think we should just all be impressed with his maturity.
Okay.
You know, after that horrendous tackle against Ghent.
Going on to Brainy quote, I don't know.
His mistake did not define him. It guided him.
Yeah, I think that's the idea. I don't know if going on to Brainy quote is a real sign of Deli's maturity, but I don't know. Maybe it is.
Well, as the Deli skeptic, I'm impressed.
Well, in that case, I withdraw my objections.
It's very presidential of him.
It is. It is very presidential of him. I think his tone was just right.
That's perfect, Brian. I have a question, though. Harry Kane scored a hat trick, but did any of those goals actually count?
Because it's Stoke?
Because it's Harry Kane, it's Stoke. I don't know. I mean, there seems to be this narrative among, again, other football fans who are stupid that no Harry Kane goals actually count. It's this one was a tap in, that one was a penalty. He was unmarked.
Wait, are these the same fans who think Mario Balotelli is some sort of god? When all he does is score penalties and tap ins with the occasional thunder bastard.
But yeah, are you not aware that this is a thing? The idea that no Harry Kane goals actually count?
Is this a broader football thing, or is this an Arsenal fan thing? Or I'm happy it's a thing.
This is a whole football fan thing of that Harry Kane isn't actually good despite being the top scorer or joint top scorer in the league in 21 games of football. That his goals are bullshit, and there's always some reason why a Harry Kane goal shouldn't have counted.
Right.
That fantastic finish for the second goal, well, he was unmarked, so that doesn't count.
So, guys, I think this brings another important question that we need to answer, which is, why is the Illuminati trying to make sure Spurs don't lose any of their key players? Because this is starting to concern me. This is really weird that, there's this bizarre – I don't think that's actually that will actually stop any good teams from buying Kane. That's a really weird opinion to have about Harry Kane.
Well, but I mean, in the wake of this game, you see tons of articles from, normal news sources like The Guardian that have to say, oh, do we finally now have to recognize that Harry Kane is one of the best strikers in the league or in Europe? And it's just why were we not recognizing that before?
Kane is incredible. And I don't feel like I'm being a homer when I say that. He does so much work.
Yeah.
And it's so important to our attack.
If you were skeptical after the first season, I totally understand that. You're all right, one season wonder. And then he came back and he did it again last year. And then now he missed, what was it, six, eight games?
Seven.
There you go, 10 at the beginning of the season. And he's still joint top scorer. And as far as, Ben's point to the meme of, Harry Kane goals don't count because, they're against Stoke or, they're unmarked or whatever.
Every London derby?
Every North London derby, maybe.
I feel like he just scores. Every time we play a London team, God, this is insane.
But, for years we had strikers that didn't score easy goals or didn't score against bad teams. So as a Spurs fan only, if that's the meme that surrounds Harry Kane, fine. I don't care. If he only scores tap-ins and he only scores goals when he's unmarked and he only scores against, shitty teams, great, perfect. Then nobody else wants him and we can just keep him in perpetuity,
That is so crazy. Kane is such a complete player. And he's been a complete player for a long time. Oh, wow. I did not know that was a thing, Ben. I figured that was a dumb Spurs fan thing, but.
Oh, no, it is very much a thing. It was every time Harry Kane scores, there's some caveat that makes it less meaningful than any other goal that anybody else scored. And, like, Harry Kane was the top scorer in the league last year, second top scorer the year before, joint top this year. And it's like, I don't know what it's going to take for people to realize that Harry Kane is fucking awesome. But, again, if that means that Real Madrid's not going to buy him, then great. But, yeah.
I'll tell you what it'll take. It'll take a crazy performance in the Euros or the World Cup, and then Manchester United is going to get a boner for him. They will start offering us larger and larger amounts of money, and I'm not looking forward to that. But I think it'll be international performances. That'll be what really turns people on Kane.
That's probably why a lot of English fans don't think very highly of him.
Yeah, he was bad at corner kicks in the Euros. I mean, it's absolutely moronic.
Kane is excellent. He's not having a great season, other than his finishing. He's been missing from a lot more games. His shot production is down. His chance production is down. He's been good. He's a very, very good striker that is one of Spurs' better players. But other than his finishing, I think this is I thought Harry Kane was going to make a leap this season. I thought that was one of the big chances that we had to really get great. And I think he has not been as good this season as he was in the last two seasons. I'm hoping that he
I feel like he's turned more. I feel like he's turned a bit of a corner recently, though. Like I was assuming maybe I'm being generous here, but it seemed to me like he was getting his feet under him after his injury. But it feels like lately he's sort of, I don't know, we're getting what you would expect out of Kane.
I thought he was excellent against Stoke, even putting aside that his finishing was completely stupid. I thought it was excellent. But
I mean, he has three hat tricks in the past nine games. Like,
yeah, but I'm saying his finishing has been fantastic, and right, and one, like, of those games was against Villa, but
and Fulham. whatever. They were Premier League teams in my heart. But, like, you know, it's hard, and maybe your numbers parse this better, but, like, Spurs as a team have struggled a lot this season. We've had injury problems. We've had, you know, weird inconsistencies and inability to compensate for missing players and struggles to figure out what a good formation looks like. And it's like, our problems have been kind of macro to the whole team in a way that I'm not sure how useful pointing out individual failures in those moments actually describe those players, because there have been so many systemic issues with how our team functions across this season. You know, the fact that we're in, like, third or second, you know, notwithstanding, you know, this hasn't been the kind of season like last year where we were easily one of the best teams, if not the best team in the league. You know, this season we're kind of in the pack. We've got some bounces. Some things have gone wrong. But, like, you know, we haven't had that, like, kind of cohesive play that would allow a guy like Harry Kane to thrive on a week-to-week basis. I mean, is that fair? Or do you think there's something wrong with Harry Kane specifically?
Oh, I don't think there's anything wrong with Harry Kane. I think that, to be clear, I don't think that Harry Kane is, like, having a bad season that needs to be explained that we need to worry about. I think that Harry Kane is a lot of this is just from – I mean, you know, I agree that football is complicated. Systemic issues are always going to be almost impossible to disentangle from individual performance. But – if I just go back in my head over Harry Kane's performances, I don't think he's taken a step forward from the last two seasons. He's having a good season, but I think that in terms of sort of like he I wouldn't want to say that, like, he's the only cause of things, but he's not getting on the end of the same number of passes in dangerous situations. He's not getting on the end of the same number of chances. He's not showing up in our attack quite as much as he did in the numbers, and both, I think, as well as in our heads in the last couple of years. And it's not like it's this horrible thing. It means that he's having a slightly worse season than two really great seasons, and merely he's having an excellent season as a top Premier League striker. But I think he's having an okay and sort of consolidating season.
Okay, but again, you're speaking okay in terms of expecting Harry Kane to do, like, what's that next step you're talking about when he's, again, scored 20-plus goals over the past two seasons and is on pace to do that for the third season in a row? Like, where's this imaginary level we're talking about that, you know, some other striker is hitting that he's not?
Yeah, I mean, Harry Kane showed up on the scene as a 21 or 22-year-old who could put up a 20-goal season. Like, you're imagining a guy who can put up a 30-goal season, right? Like, that's what you want from his peak.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you want that, but, like, that's a thing that almost never happens, especially in England. Like, there aren't 30-goal strikers. Like, that, I mean, has that happened? Suarez and Ronaldo in the past 10 years, is that it? Like, I mean, that's a level that's, I would say, almost unattainable.
Yeah, if Harry Kane just stays what he is, that will be great. But when a guy shows up on the scene at 21 or 22 doing that, you want to see more.
Yeah, I mean, I don't agree that I, you know, would like more. Obviously, more is better. But I think I would at least put that failure to do more down to systemic team problems, more to Harry Kane failing to develop problems.
And one of the issues with development curves is that when someone's as good as Kane is, shows up as such a complete package, they don't have the same kind of development curve as someone who clearly, you know, you can see where they need to improve.
I mean, you know, you look at a guy like Lukaku, who is, you know, also fairly plateaued despite, you know, coming on at 19 being as absurd as we're talking about with Kane. You know, he's not scoring particularly more. He's not particularly more involved. He's not, you know, those things haven't really happened. And I just don't know that it's reasonable to expect those from Kane, and certainly not to the extent that you would discount his performances in any way because of. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, well, I'm just
the best.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Or we should get rid of him and sign Berbatov again.
I mean, obviously.
Obviously. So, yeah, it was a pretty great game. And also, Vertonghen and Alderweireld might be dead, or they might not be dead. It's kind of vague, and given that Pochettino's a liar, we have no idea of what their status is. So we could be incredibly fucked, or everything could be fine. They said it was precautionary, but I don't believe that until we see them on the pitch against Everton this weekend.
So, I mean, how fucked are we if we have to go the rest of the season, or any sizable chunk of the season, without Jan and Toby?
I think we're pretty fucked.
Fucked, right?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I don't think we're like, yeah. Like, I don't know.
Without both of them, we're pretty fucked.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be bad. I mean, we're going to see Dyer, Vimmer back there. I mean, do we go to a back four? Do we work Davies in and try to play a back three? It's, I don't know. We're losing
Carter Vickers, God forbid.
Oh, God, please no. Yeah, I don't know. I think we're pretty screwed. We certainly can't rotate if we lose them. So the FA Cup matches ought to be real interesting. Yeah, I don't think it's good. Hopefully, if they're out, it's just temporary. But the news, I feel like we would have, the papers have been sniffing around, and we probably would have heard something if they were really screwed, but we haven't heard anything yet. But I guess tomorrow or Friday we might get our first inklings. But here's hoping we see them both on the pitch this weekend. That would be nice. All right, I think we have time for a few questions before we head out for this week. Brian, at what point will Vincent Janssen, this comes from Dean Ballack on Twitter, he wants to know, at what point will Vincent Janssen tell Pochettino that economic anxiety is ruining his performances this year?
I think it'll be at some point after the Millwall match.
Or during. It might be the most appropriate time, during
it. Could be during. During, that might be better. Yeah, that's a better idea.
What's up next? Brian, actually, Brian, we'll go two for two with you because you were just there.
Hey.
After our season at Wembley, this comes from Simon Hemsworth on Twitter, how will we fare in the championship?
I think we'll fare great. I think I saw a championship game while I was there, and I think that most of our players would do pretty well at that level. So it'll be nice.
Who'd you see?
We saw Brentford host Rotherham, and we saw it was 2-2 going into the 89th minute, and then Brentford scored two late goals and won 4-2. It was interesting.
Speaking of Brentford, remember when Alex Pritchard was a thing?
Like a year ago? I do.
Or 2 years? Was it 2 years ago?
Yeah. Now I cannot name a single one of their players, including their player that scored the hat trick. I have never heard of any of them.
Kaylee, didn't Brentford stop being Stats FC?
Yes.
So they're not a favorite of the nerd intelligentsia anymore?
That's correct.
Are you guys actively rooting against them, or is it just being ignored?
I haven't received directives from the central command recently. But as far as I know, we're supposed to think that they're not bad or good because a lot of their players were acquired by people who use Stats.
Mm.
So we're still supposed to like them.
That's a real rock and a hard place.
But they're really like 16th in the league, so they're probably actually not that good.
Yeah. And obviously, any failures that they have are down to things other than stats. Stats like, can like never fail. They can only be failed.
Like guts and heart. Or grit.
Exactly.
Even. Grit.
Management.
Too much grit.
Yeah, not enough bravery.
They've lacked confidence all year.
Well, when OptiJoe sends you the directive, you'll be sure to pass it along to us so we can keep it up to date with what's going on in all the various spheres of soccer Twitter. Our next question, I think this is very important. I think Michael should take it. This comes from Chris on Twitter. He wants to know, how many times have you met with representatives of CSKA Moscow?
I want to be very clear to listeners to the pod. I have never met with any representatives of CSKA Moscow, Zenit St. Petersburg, or any other Russian Premier League team. And to imply that I have is a kind of fake news.
Mr. Kaylee, this is Skipjack from SB Nation. We have photographic evidence of you meeting with Slutsky from CSKA Moscow earlier this year on Twitter.com. You are adding him. Do you have any comments?
Oh, yeah. I want to be clear. I misremembered when I was speaking earlier, and in regard to my meetings that happened every single day for the last year with representatives from FC Rostov, when I said Russian Premier League, I wasn't thinking of them because they often weren't in the Russian Premier League. So I think my answer was completely truthful.
Thank you, comrade. We appreciate your honesty with the podcast. Let's ask an actual question of our panel. Ben, assuming Eric Lamela ever returns to the squad this year, which actually is a pretty broad assumption at this point, how will it impact the squad, do you think?
It's interesting because Eric Lamela, I think, makes that 4-2-3-1 system work in a way that it hasn't a lot this season without him. I think the things that Lamela brings to the table, Son just doesn't really replicate. As much as I like Son, I think he, does a lot of useful things. They're not the same things that Lamela does. He doesn't have that same kind of work rate. He doesn't play those same kind of through balls. He's not as much of a facilitator. And so I think that would be improved. But in Lamela's absence, we've discovered this back three system that it's really hard to find a place for Lamela in because, there's only really three attacking roles. And Kane, Ali, and Eriksen complement each other so well that I think that's pretty much on lock. I mean, the only potential option is, again, something that I've wanted for a really long time is to see Eriksen in central midfield, which would free up a role for Lamela further forward.
Or we can drop Dele Alli.
Yeah, but I think Dele Alli gives us, these kind of top line production numbers in terms of goals and assists that Lamela has never managed in his whole career at Spurs.
Lamela's had a lot of assists at Spurs. I mean, did he lead the league last year or something like that?
I mean, wasn't he like 12-12 in all competitions last?
I don't know about any of that. But in the Premier League, it certainly hasn't been the case. And Ali, the last 2 years, have put up both goals and assists. And Lamella, frankly, just doesn't score enough. And, you know, Harry Kane is as terrible as Kaylee would suggest. You know, we need somebody to shoulder that goal-scoring burden. And it's not going to be Lamella, and it shouldn't be Eriksen. And so I would keep Dele Alli in. I mean, I think a team with Lamella and Eriksen and Kane as our front three would work, but I think you're losing something. So I really don't know what his return would mean. I mean, I think that 4-2-3-1 with him was very good, and, you know, Dyer is superior to Wanyama in every single respect, and so getting him the fuck out of the team is not something I'm opposed to. So I don't know. I wouldn't mind that reversion so much, but, you know, we've hit a groove right now, and I think I honestly don't know that even if Lamella gets better, I don't know how much I expect to see him over the course of the season.
I mean, I think it depends. Obviously, it depends on his health, but assuming that you can get a fully healthy Eric Lamella back, I think you got to find a way to work him in the team, because I think, especially with his through balls and his passing, he helps us cut defenses open in a way that, frankly, has been a bit of a recurring issue for us this year. And like you said, Ben, Son does not, as flashy as he can be at times, he doesn't have that ability to sort of make that pass in the way that Lamella does, certainly from distance. And when you combine that with his defensive work rate, I think you got to at least, and maybe it'll happen late enough in the year, we don't have the luxury of experimenting, but you got to try to get Lamella in there somewhere, given what he can offer.
But the thing is, with the back three, our record is fucking immaculate. I mean,
there's got to be a way to get him into that
lineup. We don't really lose. Have we lost a game in the back three?
No, we didn't beat Ghent.
Yeah, okay, so we drew a game against Ghent that we dominated significantly. But, like, in the league so far, not only are we winning with the back three, we're putting up, like, 4-0 score lines every week.
So you don't think do you think finding, at least at this point in the season, because in the offseason that's a whole other question, but you don't think is it more trouble than it's worth to find Lamella a place in this system with the back three
at this point in the year? It honestly might be. I mean, I think if there's a system where we could get like a Dembele Eriksen midfield working or a Wanyama Eriksen midfield working, you know, I think bringing in Lamella isn't insane, but I have a really hard time disrupting something that's working so well.
Well, at a bare minimum, having Lamella gives us more options. It lets us either, you know, we can take Dele out if we need to, missing games, or we can shift formations if we have to.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of subs and rotation, I mean, every minute we don't have to see Sissoko on the pitch is a great minute for Tottenham Hotspur. And so having Lamella as that 12th man instead of fucking Sissoko is wonderful. So, I mean, he'll certainly have a role to play. But, yeah, I don't know that our system is worth disrupting.
Now, in the offseason, I mean, putting aside that you want to, like, send Wanyama and Sissoko to another planet, but, I mean, in the offseason, we have to find a way to work him in, right?
I mean, I'm fine with Wanyama. Let me just be clear. Like, he's a valuable part of the squad. He's done a really good job at the things he does. But kill Sissoko. For the future of Tottenham Hotspur, I'm still not sure what that looks like. I honestly, I don't know. I'm happy with this back three. I really like it.
Yeah,
Lamella's
too important to this team. I love him too much. We got to get him in there somewhere.
I mean, the thing is like he is, and I mean, he was important last year. I would say he was crucial last year, and I think he would have been crucial this year to the point where had we had him available, you know, a title challenge would still be an option. But in his absence, I think we found a way to cope that not just copes, but maybe exceeds what we were capable of last year. I don't know. Kaylee, Brian, does anybody agree with that?
Apparently
yes,
not.
I guess. I don't know. Sure. It's fine. It's very well thought out analysis.
I think that's I think someone's trying to play us off, Ben. So
yeah. The Oscars.
I think Kaylee's got to go get his borscht ready for lunch tomorrow. So, and on that note, let's wrap it up. Michael, where can people find you on the internet?
You can listen to the Double Pivot podcast. Had a special guest this week, Ben, and as usual, you can follow me.
Who was the special guest though?
I was very special. Well, trust me.
Special. Look, that's with just air
what Michael tells
no,
you.
We spent like 10 minutes on the magic of the cup, so don't miss it.
Good God.
But yeah, I'm on Twitter at Brett Rainbow, and I haven't tweeted from that account recently. But if you send lots and lots of notifications and direct messages that account, I'll start using it more.
Definitely direct message that account. Definitely direct message it. Everyone who listens to this podcast should direct message at Brett Rainbow. Give him your best startup ideas, and by him I mean Michael. Definitely just Michael.
Yeah.
So that Michael can growth hack your startup.
Exactly. He needs your growth hacking ideas. Brian, where can people growth hack you on the internet?
I am on Instagram at Brett Rainbow. And I can be found also on Twitter at Brian with a Y, THFC.
Ben, where can people find you online?
You can find me at Gary Rootbeer.
Where?
That's it.
Where?
And also on the Double Pivot podcast. Apparently.
And this week on the Double Pivot podcast, putting Mike Goodman to shame.
And I am your host, Skipjack. You can find me on Twitter at Skipjack0079. And please reach out to me on Venmo at Brett Rainbow. I'll be very happy to hear from you. So, guys, that's it for this week. Thank you very much. And come on, you Spurs. Thank you.